The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Kick things off with our afternoon update, catching up on all that has happened today. Paul Hosford is with me, political correspondent with the Irish Examiner, and Mary McCarthy, columnist with the Irish Independent. Mary, have you a woman you'd like to name a naval vessel after?
You'll
look up when I mention that.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of them, really.
Evine, they've gone for. They're kind of bland, aren't they?
Is it like a famous person or just a name?
They used to name all the naval vessels in the Defence Forces kind of after...
Eli Aoife
and Orla and Niamh. And then when Alan Shatter was Minister for Defence and Justice, he brought in a new naming system, and then we had the Samuel Beckett and the W.B. Yeats.
Okay.
And things like that. And now that he's gone, they've recorrected course, and they've gone back to kind of 6th century saints.
Yeah. Yeah. We could do a 6th century saint. Yeah. I mean, right.
The Ellie Mary.
Yeah.
Like the sound of it.
I could get used to that.
Paul, let's talk about this issue with taxi drivers in Cork, because I suspect it is something that will resonate wherever you are in the country, though the warning is kind of Cork related today. And it's that there's too few taxis. And part of the reason for that, they say, taxi drivers say, is that the streets are more violent, the job is more dangerous, knives are being pulled on them, nothing is being done about it. All of this combines to make it utterly unattractive.
Yeah, I think if you look across the board, the NTA's figures have taxi numbers down in 23 of 26 counties. Worst across the border region in terms of an overall drop, but within Cork City, look, my family are from Cork, and I know plenty of people down in Cork, where our offices are down in Cork. And they will tell you all the time that getting a taxi is extremely difficult at times. And it's the same in any of the urban centres. And if you talk to taxi drivers, the issues are uniform across the country. Violence, threats of violence, just, I suppose, the overall atmosphere in cities and towns after big nights out particularly. Cost of petrol's gone up, cost of insurance goes up. It's getting more expensive. There's also a natural aging out. If you look, Cork is down about 7%. There's just over 2,200 taxis in the county of Cork. Cork is obviously massive. They'll be concentrated in the urban areas. But if you think of the knock on effect that has in rural areas, harder to get to and from places, harder to get to and from. If you live rurally or you live close to a town, harder to get in and out of town if you wanted to have a drink, if you needed that extra bit of resource. But if you talk to taxi drivers, I was talking to a taxi driver the other day who doesn't like driving during the day because the traffic is too bad.
Yeah.
And so you're having that knock-on effect that there's less available during the day. Because
it was a post-COVID thing as well, wasn't there? Where a lot of them, because they couldn't drive, started doing other jobs and realised, you know, there's something to be said for kind of having set hours and somebody handing you a wage at the end of it.
Yeah, and in the Echoes piece that focuses on Cork, one of the things that they point out is that it's very, very difficult to transfer the licence. If you own the licence, it's very difficult to transfer it to somebody who might want to take on that job. So they have to go through the process of getting a licence themselves. So that's one of the things that taxi drivers are telling people, that it's very, very difficult to keep going or keep the taxi going as a going concern. So there's kind of red tape issues, but the safety one is the real issue. Taxi drivers generally don't feel safe.
And Mary, that then kind of chimes with a lot of conversations we've had, like in this studio in recent times, about kind of the state of our city centres in general, isn't it? I mean, what's happening in the taxi, within the car, is what's happening on the street in a lot of people's minds.
Yeah, I think I'm a bit of an outlier, because I actually don't think Dublin city centre is that bad. Like, I always walk home at night. I know my friends, I know, like, Paul here is raising his eyebrows, but I actually don't think it's that dangerous. I think, yes, there's more homeless people on the streets. There's more drug addicts. You can see that. I also think everyone says there's no police around. I actually do see police. I don't know if it's just me. Every time I see them, I feel like taking a picture and putting it up, but I do see them around. But I do think that there is an element. I don't know if it's in the Dublin city centre, but there is definitely, I mean, there was a story in the Examiner there last month about the taxi driver who got the stiletto in the eye. And to think that, I mean, it's awful. There's an antisocial problem, without a doubt. And I don't know if it's the city centre. I mean, I think it's probably...
I think, you know, it's more societal, isn't it?
It's more societal, yeah. There's definitely a problem with antisocial behaviour, and the police need to better crack down on it. Even those cherry blossoms out there in Tala that got knocked down. I mean, To me, that's just, do you remember at the weekend? Did you hear that?
Oh yeah, trees 30 grand's worth of cherry blossoms.
But it's just such, it's so destructive, you know, that antisocial behaviour. And to bring it back to the taxis, it should be taken so seriously.
Why is it happening?
I don't know. But if you attack a taxi driver, that should be, you should be hunted down. It's so disturbing that you would, you know, that, I mean, I interviewed this taxi driver from Afghanistan 2 years ago for the Indo. I couldn't believe his stories. I mean, he had a guy with a bottle in the car who's like, you know, a broken bottle. Like, it was just awful. Like, that kind of thing, just the police really need to, they really need to just come down like a ton of bricks and that kind of thing, you know.
And what's the sense amongst policymakers, Paul, about kind of increases in antisocial behavior? I know some of them do actually kind of echo points that Mary said, that there's an element of kind of perception being reality, you know what I mean? And maybe the perception, it kind of doesn't reflect the facts. But like, in terms of the kind of general sense of antisocial behavior being on the rise, do they say it's drugs? Do they say it's a policing issue? Do they say it's kind of just a sense of thuggishness that's been allowed to take hold and hasn't been curtailed? What's the explanation?
I think if you look across the board, the general sense when it comes to things is if you're on the opposition side, you point to the decrease in Garda numbers, overall Garda numbers. You point to the decrease in specific roads policing. But there's an uncomfortable truth in a lot of this stuff, is that you can't be policed everywhere you go. If you're a private taxi driver and you take on a fare, what happens in that car is between you and that person. And if they decide to be violent, there's very little that can be done at that time, you know. And I think that the issue there is, it is sentencing, it is kind of reaction. But I think what it comes down to is that we've probably just become a little bit more violent. I feel post-COVID that there is that kind of sense that what used to be, a verbal argument on the street is now, you know, a broken bottle, or there is that kind of hair trigger there. And I, you know, personally, I wouldn't drive a taxi at night for all the money in the world at the moment. I just, you know, and it could just be my own perceptions of Dublin City, but I don't envy those who do the job every night.
I mentioned the naval vessels. We're going to be talking about this a little bit later in the show, but actually there's a related story around today as well, Mary, and it's the new bridge in Galway.
Oh, yes.
So, Drogheda Docus. Now, their aspiration is to be commended, right? So, like the kind of naming committee talked about, you know, that the Corrib, like any river in Ireland, is the scene of tragedy and has been in the past, and they want to kind of change the narrative around it and all of that. Like I say, all very commendable. Bridge of Hope is kind of banal, isn't it?
I love it.
Mary, stop.
No,
stop.
Hope is no. Jeepers. Do we need? We need so much more hope.
No one's going to call it the Bridge of Hope.
No, I think it's lovely. It cuts through.
Mary, I'll be with you in a minute.
I think it will take on its own name, though, won't it? These things, like if they're not officially named, they tend to take on their own name.
It already has. You know what it is?
Hopeful.
You know the Salmon Weir Bridges of the Road, so they're calling it the Salmonella.
Oh dear,
that's a good one, isn't it?
But no, I love it. I think Bridge of Hope, it cuts through. It's simple. It's, you know, it's, as you say, the history of bridges in the past, like, we need hope. Like, the world, I don't know about you guys, I feel the world's falling apart. You know, there's a tent in the little park across the road from me. The kids can't go play there anymore. I just feel we need hope. So lash it out to us and call it Bridge of Hope. It is slightly simplistic, but that's what we need.
Oh, would you not name it after someone, no?
Nah, there's enough.
Joe Canning Bridge or something like that in Galway.
I think the thing about naming things after people is that you become hostage to a moment in time.
That's
and you come become
oh,
hostage
yeah.
to the
Joe
norms
Canning,
of the
all
time.
All the skeletons in Joe Canning's closet might come out in the future.
I'm not saying anything about Galway's greatest hurler. But, you know, you come to a point where you become hostage to what was normal at that time, or who was revered at that time. I mean, you walk up and down O'Connell Street, there's statues of William Smith O'Brien and Sir John Gray. I don't think anyone.
Oh, I know. Sure, my son was asking me, "Who's that? Who's that?" And I'm like, "Hmm."
And that was the norm at the time, and that was, you know, there's an argument for the O'Connell Street, particularly. It's meant to kind of represent the Irish people, and then this man who stood apart, but. Now, if you look at them, I think if you started to tear those statues down, you probably would. Most Dubliners wouldn't bat an eyelid.
But statues, if your son is asking about the Mary, you like maybe he could Google them and he'd learn a little bit about history. No one's going to learn anything about the Bridge of Hope.
No, that's true. But we've enough statues.
Just somewhere else to be stuck in traffic in Galway.
I think we need more bridges, more hope. You know, I think. Do you remember Boris had this? This is a bit random. Boris had that idea to build a bridge Northern Ireland.
Oh yeah.
Well, we should build. I was looking into it.
I call
that. China. There's the longest bridge in the world is in China. It's 154 kilometres. So we could easily, it can be done. We could build a bridge to Holyhead.
You just won't let anyone from Galway name it.
Yeah, that's it.
Drogheda and Dunk. I think Drogheda and Dunk is an awful name.
I think we're generally bad at naming things.
I genuinely do. I think it's awful. I think there's a bridge in Kilkenny called Ossory Bridge, and it's named for the diocese, obviously. But it's kind of meaningless as well. And nobody calls it Ossory Bridge because it's meaningless. Whereas there's more... more recently built bridges that are named for people and are known for it. The Edmund Rice Bridge. Now, listen, you can criticise calling it after Edmund Rice if you want, but at least, I don't know, it gives it, it's more real or something, the name. It's more meaningful.
I just think we do need hope, like climate change, all these Sudan, Ukraine. I mean, we do need hope. So I think it's quite an apt and timely. I think
you're like
name.
Emily Dickinson.
I think generally
we're Elizabeth Bishop. Which one is hope is the thing with feathers and which one is the fish?
Emily Dick. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mixed the two of them up.
I think if you look at how we've named things, though, you kind of get the sense that Ireland, you know, achieved independence. So we've named things after most of the major figures there. And then we had some good writers and that was it. I think we need to broaden our scope of what we name people.
Jack Lynch Tunnel in Cork.
Well, that was Cork. I mean, Cork is Cork.
Well, yeah, they were never going to name it after anyone outside the county. Realistically, listen, we're going to talk about this a little bit later. I have to say, I think Mary's opinion is wrong. It's as straightforward as that. So, if you've got
you wouldn't be alone, Kieran.
Then Drogheda and Dorcas, the Bridge of Hope. I'd like to hear it on 087 1400 106. I want to ask about the Eurovision before you go. This is something else we'll talk about later. So Bambi Thug, who is competing for Ireland, more and more pressure mounting on them not to perform, including by some people who actually competed to be the nominee this year, Paul.
Yeah, and that's something that kind of sticks in my craw. But I think one of the things that you look at is boycott is supposed to be. It's supposed to be inconvenient. It's supposed to put you out. That's the whole point. And I think if we only boycott the things that are handy for us, and I think that was part of Bambi Thug's argument, was that if they weren't there, they would be boycotting. But I'm not sure how that works. If you look at the acts who lined up to do South by Southwest, St. Patrick's Week, the likes of Soda Blonde, the likes of Mick Flannery, they gave up a huge opportunity and arguably a bigger opportunity. South by Southwest is this huge music festival in Austin in Texas, where everyone from the music industry comes, distributors, labels, the likes of those bands had the chance to put themselves in front of everyone from the American and worldwide music industry, and they boycotted because of links with US arms manufacturers, with the US Army. That's what actual boycott is. Saying that you would do it, painting your nails in the Palestinian colours, it all feels a little bit kind of half-hearted for me. If you're going to make the argument that you want to stay, and Leo Varadkar makes this argument about boycotts all the time, he says, look, you don't achieve anything by taking yourself off the pitch. It's different with the Russians because they were banned from the competition. He doesn't. Leo Varadkar constantly makes the argument that we shouldn't boycott things that Israel is still allowed to compete in, purely because all you do is kind of spite yourself. And if you want to make that argument, that's an argument that can be made. I think, you know, arguing that you would do it if you weren't there, weak enough argument for me.
But there is, though, merit in going and protest. That can be more impactful.
Yeah, absolutely. And if that's your argument, make that argument.
Yeah.
But I think kind of acknowledging that there is a legitimate call for a boycott, but saying that you won't do it because you're the one being asked to boycott is kind of trying to have your cake and eat it.
Mary?
I really think it's a bad idea. Like, we were the only country who would be boycotting, right? Because there's no other country calling for this. It was different with Russia 2 years ago, and that was in a different context of international sanctions. Everyone was behind kicking them out over the invasion of Ukraine. I just don't think there'd be anything to be gained. Israel, they probably won't reach they won't get past the semi-finals anyway. Already Ireland, I mean, they perceive us as kind of anti-Israel. I think we need to maintain relationships with Palestine and Israel. I just don't think there'd be anything to be gained from it, you know.
I always feel it's like the basketballers as well. I felt they were just in this awful situation and put into an awful situation. And I know, like, it's easy after the fact to talk about, say, the Tony Wards of this world and how brave they were not to go on that kind of rugby tour of South Africa, you know. But when you're being asked, I don't know if I would have the bravery to be the Tony Ward in that situation. I'll put it that way. I think I might have been on that plane to South Africa. I think it's easy to say, to imagine yourself as being that brave. I feel actually really bad for Bambi Thug and people have been putting this.
I think so, and I agree with the basketball comparison, because those guys were put in an awful situation where the events conspired around them. And I think that it is similar enough with Bambi Thug. But for me, it's about, you know, you can't make a statement and not make a statement at the same time. You either have to do one or the other, either defend your position or...
You could go and do like the Tommy Smith or the John Carlos, you know, at the 1968 Olympics with the fists in the air.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't boycott. If they had boycotted, they'd just be a footnote in history. No one would really remember them.
Yeah,
but the
true.
Image of them on the podium, I mean, is one of the iconic photographs of the 20th century.
Yeah. But the Eurovision, do you not think it's just a poor vehicle for making it political?
It's a poor vehicle, full stop, Mary.
I love the Eurovision. It's brilliant.
God.
It's great fun. But like, it's kitschy. It's fun. It's, you know, it's not... it's been largely apolitical. Okay, there has been, do you remember, was it 2009, Georgia had that song, "We Don't Want a Putin," and they were kicked out.
You'll have to educate me now.
Oh yeah, so anyway, just after the Russian invasion of Georgia, they had a song saying, "We Don't Want a Putin," and they were kicked out over that.
Oh, were they?
Because it sounds like, yeah, we don't want a Putin. Do you not remember that?
No, I was actually in Russia when they invaded Georgia. Sidebar, and I didn't know it had happened until I got out of Russia into Mongolia on the other side.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh, what was Mongolia like? I'd love to
Mongolia
go there.
Mongolia is amazing.
Yeah,
now we're going
to
talk about holidays for a few
minutes. Oh, Mongolia.
Incredible.
It just looks amazing.
Yeah, went out into the steppe for like days and then it was absolutely brilliant.
Before kids, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah.
Drank fermented mare's milk. Regretted that.
Oh, that doesn't sound.
Tell
yeah,
you.
Other drinks I put up higher than that.
Anyway, it was great. Kieran, if Galway win the All Ireland, they could call the bridge the Henry Shefflin Bridge. I like that idea. I like it. Call it the 2024, then everyone will know it was built, says Dave from Carlow. The Mary Coughlin Bridge is another suggestion. I agree with you. It's a vile name for the bridge. Vile. Did you hear that, Mary?
Oh, that's strong.
Vile, says Maria.
Gosh.
Marginally better, though, than naming it after someone, like every bit of construction in Galway already is. And there should be bridges and statues and roads named after Roy Keane in every county in Ireland, says Richard the Thatcher.
Strong agree with that.
Yeah, the Saipan Bridge. 087-1400-106. You can keep those suggestions coming. Mary McCarthy, columnist of the Irish Independent. Paul Hosford, political correspondent with the Irish Examiner. Thank you both very, very much.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.